there's a lot more that I'd like to talk to you about, David, but I think I want to bring it back home to Eau Claire. Again, the way I found out about you was the CV Post, the Chippewa Valley Post, cvpost.org. They've got all kinds of links to articles relevant locally here in the Chippewa Valley. They had a link to information about your visit with Grace Lutheran Church. Grace Lutheran Church is part of the ELCA, again, which I've identified generally as maybe more progressive, maybe it's more liberal, but it's Lutheran Church on the liberal end of the spectrum generally. They had a problem that arose when the National Church decided that local churches could have folks who were gay, lesbian as pastors, could be called. They made it as a national policy with local decision making, and the defecation hit the ventilator in Grace Lutheran. And so when I find that you have this background talking about LGBT issues, but you came here speaking about eco-spiritual issues, I figure there's some connection in the foment that's happening within Grace Lutheran that leads them to say, what else are we missing? Now, there's been a couple years of misery, actually, there is congregation split apart. And so they've been going through their issues in terms of their faithful witness. What do you notice in the spiritual life of the people you're meeting with there that relates to this LGBT, eco-spiritual, that connection, the transformation that they're in the process of?
Here's what I can say about that. I know that Grace Lutheran, they didn't reach out to me because of my prior work around LGBT issues. For all I know, they may have not wanted to touch me with a 10-foot pole if they would have known that, simply because, as you say, this is a community that has been through a lot of pain internally as their present members and their past members wrestled with how do we make sense of a church community that's moving in a direction that we don't recognize as our own any longer. Having said that, let me say that I know that one dynamic that plays out within congregations when they make a choice to be welcoming and affirming of LGBT people is that part of what drives that is an openness to bringing new questions to Scripture in new ways, and a recognition that somehow if God is a good creator, then it must be good for us to be embodied. And that therefore, when our bodies speak to us, even sexually, when our bodies speak to us, that we might lean into that body's speech with a sense of trust. Now, that absolutely doesn't mean that everything that our bodies ask for, everything that our bodies enjoy, it doesn't automatically mean carte blanche, you know, whatever feels good, do it. But it does mean that when there are faithful Christians determined to speak reverently and faithfully about what they experience as the gracious touch of another person, those Christians deserve the affirmation to be able to trust the goodness of their embodiment the way that the majority of us who are straight are invited to trust the goodness of our embodiment. And for congregations that are willing to do that, that are willing to say, and this comes in the face of a long legacy of having been taught both by what we're told and by the deafening silence of what we're not told, we've been taught to mistrust our embodiment. But over the last 20 years, people have begun to say maybe we ought to trust it. And that comes out of the feminist womanist movement, that when women speak and do theology out of their lived experience as women, they ought to be able to trust that. And when persons of color do theology out of their lived experience of being a person of color, they ought to be able to trust that. And the same is true for LGBT people. All of that, I think, sets us up for a new ability to look at the world around us, which is also bodied, whether it be in mountains, in trees, in animals. It's an embodied world, and that somehow we have primed ourselves for a necessary moment in which we need to hear the speech of the earth as well.